Impact in the financial returns in particular startup company will come hand in hand, right? If I've invested in a good technology which is going to make an impact, it's because it'll sell and it'll be global, or at least it'll take over a large part of the market. So, and then it'll do well. So the things do go hand in hand. So I won't invest in a company if I don't think it's going to succeed. There's no point if they have some nice idea, but ultimately the company is going to fail. I haven't invested in anything. So I have to look at not just the technology, I have to look at the management team. I have to understand their financing. Do they have the financing for the next step? How are they going to grow? All the same business issues come up because the company has to succeed. Otherwise, we won't get the impact we're looking for.
This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, brought to you by Gold Rock Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast. My name is Darren Rockman, and I'm a partner at Gold Rock Capital, the more than 20-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel and around the world. This is a special edition of the podcast recorded at our first ever Definitely Uncertain live event held at the Hilton Hotel in November of 2022. In this edition, my friend and partner David Ram interviews Dr. Gideon Stein, an investor in impact, and they discuss together the world of impact investing and how it is executed in practice. I hope you enjoy this special episode and look out for more episodes coming your way soon.
So I want to invite to the stage with me Dr. Gideon Stein. Dr. Stein, together with his wife Marla, are philanthropists and impact investors. Gideon was the CTO of Mobileye from its founding, I think. Is that right?
VP R&D.
From mid-1999?
Correct. Through 2005, and then I became the chief research scientist.
Okay.
Until 2020.
I'm not sure what the difference of those two things are, but that's good.
One's a managerial role, and the other is more fun.
More fun. Fair enough. 15 years of fun. And since then, you've been active managing your own personal portfolio.
Correct.
Primarily focused on impact investing across the board. So, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. So to get started, you've been active in a company, actually, which arguably could be viewed as an impact type company, saving lives, saving gas, I'm not sure which one or both. When did you start getting involved in impact? Was it during your time at Mobileye? Was it after the liquidity event of Mobileye?
So I think my choice to join Mobileye was significantly part as an impact investment. I have intellectual capital and I have my time, and I was wanted to put it in something which would produce something which was worthwhile. Reducing traffic fatalities by 50% seems a positive impact. In terms of fuel, it turns out that Coca-Cola Hellenic, which tried our aftermarket system, reduced their fuel consumption by 10%. Just their drivers were less aggressive, because when they would come too fast, it would slow them down. So it had a lot of impact. But I didn't know it would have that much impact, but it was what I wanted to devote my time after my studies into doing that. And then there was an early liquidity event. Goldman Sachs invested in 2007, and we got to sell some of our shares. And so I had a nice cushion of money, and I wasn't thinking about impact investing, but I did make two investments. One was in power solar fields in the Negev, in the Arava. And the second was a company called Immunity Pharma, which was just starting on the beginning of developing a treatment for ALS. And I just happened to invest in those without really a focus saying, oh, I'm going to be an impact investor. But it just happened that the two startups I invested in were on the impact realm. But after the money really started flowing in after the IPO and after Intel bought the company and I had no stock left in Mobileye, that's when the impact investing started.
So that must have been a journey for yourself. And was there a conversation or many conversations with yourself, your wife, your other members of the family around specific strategy? We heard earlier that it can be quite a personal definition about what impact actually means for you or versus others.
Very much. So I was a tech person. So my background is technical. And so I like investing in the startups and the technology and things like that. And we also, at the point where we realized how much the options from Mobileye were going to be worth. We also decided to split and decide, okay, 25% is now dedicated to philanthropy. We set up a 501c3 American fund and put the money in there. So the money was now invested. And so that is something which Marla and I just discussed. We're the only ones who make the decisions. And we agreed we're very happy with that solution. And then we have the rest of the money. What are we doing with that? We're investing it. And so I was very much into impact in terms of the startups. And then it's actually Marla who came on and said, okay, but what's happening to the rest of the money? Where is it sitting? And because our philanthropy is going to the environment, it's going to liberal democracy, it's going to climate, but you know, what's the rest of the money doing? And then you go through the portfolio and you see, well, it's like in the S&P 500. Half the companies there are companies doing things which are fighting what we're using our philanthropy money for. So that doesn't make sense. And so she really initiated the idea that we also have to focus our public equity portfolio, sort of make that an impact portfolio. And that was a journey.
Interesting, because public, it's a very different process. We heard earlier as well that a lot of the public approach is more a relative value approach, meaning how good are you at environmental social governance within the sector that you're involved in. For example, I think ExxonMobil is one of the highest rated ESG companies in the market because they're more environmentally conscious than their peers in their sector. So how do you do that? You must have a customized approach. I think Dahi mentioned you have a business in that sector.
Right. So basically, when we approached our banks, we work with Bank Leumi here and a small bank in Kansas City, Commerce Bank in Kansas City, where my wife is from, and we said this is what we would like to do with our public equities, they really did not know what we're talking about. They had this nice basic approach, maximize your profits and make donations. That was the typical approach. And so we really had to learn how to work. And then it turns out that a woman in our neighborhood in Beit HaKerem, Jerusalem, Noga Levtzion Nadan, is actually one of the Israeli experts in this topic of ESG. And she works a lot on rating of Israeli companies for this. And we talked to her and we decided that it would make sense to start a fund which would allow us to really understand what is the process and which companies are going into it. So in other words, rather than pick something like S&P 500 ESG because it has those three letters at the end, really understand what's in the companies we're picking. And so we decided to do that. And so we have not all our wealth, not all our public equity, but transferring the money into that. Because obviously after the exit and things, the banks decided what we should do with our money and put it in S&P 500, all the standard things. So it's a question of now moving that into an ESG portfolio. And so we created this fund called Value Squared. It's an investment house. It has a few different products. And they're the very strict in terms of what is ESG. For example, there are certain things you don't invest in. One is fuel, firearms, tobacco. So even if maybe Philip Morris is the best in class of tobacco companies, we don't invest in them. So they get screened off, so that answers your Exxon question.
Right.
But then inside the companies which are in the fields which are acceptable, you do pick the best in class in terms of the ESG. And then you also look to see, are they doing anything positive? Are they taking any of the UN development goals? And are they helping solve some of those problems? And we want companies which are doing something, which are pushing. It's hard to take a big company like Nestle or Schneider Electric or something like that and expect them to be totally focused on solving world hunger. But they do. Schneider Electric does a lot of solar work. And Nestle has programs trying to improve nutrition in developing world. So some of their products go in that way. Some of their products are sugared breakfast cereals. It's a problem. But that's the public equity side. And we know that a lot of money is going to be there. So that is what we did.
Does it take into consideration trade-offs? Because oftentimes it could be a solar energy company with meaningful environmental impact from the perspective of net zero, but maybe have negative environmental impact because it's made out of cadmium telluride, for example, which is not exactly environmentally friendly.
That's correct. You do have to look into those things, and those things do actually get graded in the environmental classification. Moody's database is very detailed in those things. So it does look into the controversies and what is the environmental impact. If I'm investing in a startup company, then I fully understand what there is, what the product does. If it's a huge international conglomerate with a lot of different parts, yeah, it's not really possible, but you can do better than nothing. That's the main thing. If you actually put in the energy into it, or you have people who know how to put, or are willing to put in the energy, and you hire them to do it, then you can do better than nothing. And it's a good thing. I mean, there are certain things, I think everyone in the room has certain things which they would definitely say, I'm not going to invest in this. And if you are investing in a broad index, then it's quite possible you are invested in those things, you just don't know it.
Yep.
And so I think it's important. I want my money to be clean, even the stuff which I'm not really thinking about.
Yeah, and from a market performance perspective, I can only assume with all the regulatory tailwinds that are beneficial to a lot of the environmental especially, but others as well, has it been a similar experience than the broader markets?
Similar, but it has its ups and downs. There was a time where oil companies couldn't get rid of the oil which they were producing, and so their stock shares went down. Then suddenly there's a war in Ukraine and the energy companies go up. So it's not exactly the same. When we looked at, for example, an S&P-like portfolio which has 200 companies which are okay out of the 500, its performance over 2 years, which we back-tested, was basically the markets go up, everything goes up. The markets go down, everything goes down, and there's some difference in day-to-day performance. So it wasn't a huge difference, but I guess you can't know what the future is going to hold. The only thing I know is that I haven't been investing in companies which are doing bad things. So that's the only thing which is guaranteed. What is the ESG, SDG impact of the companies which I'm invested in? What the future will hold in terms of financial performance, you can't really time the market or know.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the private markets, which I think are more controlled from your side, probably more exciting as well. And do you look at specific, you mentioned SDGs, which is Sustainable Development Goals, I think there are 17 of them from the UN. Mm-hmm. Are you using that as a kind of a guiding light to identify what you want to do with the capital, or are you doing your own very customized way of thinking about it in the private markets?
In the private markets, I have a few areas which I'm more focused on. Issues of climate change and climate mitigation, because we know shit's going to happen. How do we get the markets like agritech, things to deal with the fact that the soil is not going to be as good, there's not going to be as much rain, etc. So those are the one main focus. And the other is healthcare and technologies for healthcare is also quite a big part of my portfolio. I think now I'm focusing more on the climate and agritech side.
And you do it via deal by deal, or are you looking at funds? How do you, or are you a fund yourself, so to speak?
I'm not a fund myself. Most of my investments are individual deal by deal. We have a group of us who discuss deals and then maybe co-invest in an ad hoc way, maybe for each particular investment create some special purpose vehicle so that my 100,000 or something is combined with the others. So now we have 500,000, which in a startup is a significant amount. So then we have a position. So we would do that, but no one is forced to go into any specific deal. And not all my co-investors are as impact focused. They're all nice people. They wouldn't, again, invest in the terrible things, but they don't have as much of a focus as I do.
So what you're looking at?
It is mostly funds. It's mostly individual investments.
Right.
There is some funds. Dahlia mentioned some of them. So I've invested in the funds. Some of them do really good work. It's just less exciting because I don't get access to the actual information. I don't get to speak to the people, and it's more fun.
There's some people from Ogin here if you want to talk about Ogin later. But in terms of how you think about your diligence process, and you're looking at market returns, you're looking at impact returns, if you want to call them impact returns or impact measurement, when you're looking at those opportunities, in particular in the private markets where you have more control, what's first for you? Are you focused on, obviously there's a huge dispersion in venture returns anyway, but are you trying to think about typical venture returns on a deal-by-deal basis, or are you really focused in on the impact and hope for the financial returns to come?
The impact and the financial returns will, in particular startup company, will come hand in hand. If I've invested in a good technology which is going to make an impact, it's because it'll sell and it'll be global, or at least it'll take over a large part of the market, and then it'll do well. So the things do go hand in hand. So I won't invest in a company if I don't think it's going to succeed. There's no point if they have some nice idea, but ultimately the company is going to fail. I haven't invested in anything. So I have to look at not just the technology, I have to look at the management team, I have to understand their financing. Do they have the financing for the next step? How are they going to grow? All the same business issues come up because the company has to succeed. Otherwise, we won't get the impact we're looking for. The nice thing about impact invest, if you pick the right companies, is they could have an impact even if they don't succeed themselves, right? They could develop a technology and they fail financially. Someone else picks that up and makes the impact you're looking for. An old example is called the spinning Jenny. Some of you English people know it, right? It's the spinning machine. The person who invented that didn't make much money off it. Eventually, the big people who took it over gave him a pension so he didn't die a pauper. But he didn't make money, he made a huge impact. Ultimately, it caused climate change, if you think about it. But anyhow, so it could be things like that. There is a company I invested in which folded, a medical company. They invented something, they developed something. It's an amazing technology. Seems trivial, but it's amazing how to spin something at 10,000 RPM on a curve. As an engineer, it's a challenge. And so somebody will pick that up and make use of it. The company itself folded, I lost some money there. Luckily, not so much. There was another company which has made up for that because they did well.
Does that mitigate how you view success then? In other words, even during the failures where they perhaps overcame some engineering challenge, does that mark your book as somewhat of a success? Or is that also just a complete
failure? It's not a complete failure. It's not making the returns I hope, which because if I make more returns,
right,
then I can do more impact investing. But it does mitigate the pain. Right, because there is a company, a fintech company, which I invested in, was not an impact. It folded, and there's nothing to show for it.
Yep.
The other company, now I can also, as an investor, push the company to in the direction that they will have some of these. For example, the ALS company, I pushed them and said, okay, I want to see publications. I want to see peer-reviewed publications so that even if we don't manage to raise $40 million for the clinical trial, the information will be out there and someone else can pick it up. The same for another company, they do little planting pots for, you buy your plants in a plastic pot, so let's make it out of compost. So it goes straight into the ground. Now, suddenly it's been shown that protects the plants from viruses in the ground. I'm pushing them and say, okay, we're doing another round of investment. I want $100,000 of my investment to go to a full scientific study to show that, in fact, it works exactly as well. Not just anecdotal, but in fact, there's a scientific study. Because that is a huge development, because it means you don't have to put so much pesticide in the ground. It's great. But it needs to be out there. So even if the company is going to fold, and there it's not going to fold because we're a group which is strong enough, it doesn't need that much money. We're not looking for $40 million. So we can keep the company working. But in any case, there'll be something out there. And so there will be some benefit even if the company does not succeed. And that's important to me, and it's possible to get that if you're investing in impact.
Yeah, how do you think about measurement? That's a good example you just brought a minute ago, but you have a pretty sizable portfolio now, as far as I understand it, in terms of single companies. Do you put it on the CEOs or the CFOs of those companies to provide quarterly reporting, not only on the budget, but also on what they're doing on the impact front? And does that feed into your decision about perhaps a follow-on investment or continuation, et cetera? Because I can only assume, just like you may be disappointed financially sometimes, you often may be disappointed about the impact you're trying to create as well. So how does that work about reporting and measurement?
I'm not as formal as that. There are funds. I know Bridges Israel, which I've invested in as an LP, they come back with impact reports. The companies I invest in are smaller than that, and if they succeed, I know the impact. I have a good idea what the impact will be, and they haven't succeeded yet, so it's not clear where. There's not much to measure. If the company takes the same technology into a direction which is less impactful in my mind, and I do follow that, then I am much less excited about the company and would be much less inclined to make a follow-up investment or to try to bring in other investors. So definitely I look and see where the company's going and I try to divert them back into the good path.
So let's talk for a minute about the journey you and Marla took about making these decisions, about getting to this conclusion about impact-focused and how that changed. Because you mentioned your first two deals in 2007 were also somewhat impact-oriented, even though you may not have even realized it at the time. Talk to us about that journey and how you've developed your strategy, how you crystallized the areas you want to focus on, the areas you don't want to focus on, and how that's helped you manage your portfolio as well.
Okay, so it started off, I was more shooting in lots of different directions. I mean, talking after the IPO and stuff, we had the money. And in terms of the investments, and it was not totally, I wasn't really 100% focused on the impact. Some companies I invested because I was excited about the financial returns. They look promising, they look this, it's up fintech, it's up and coming technology. And then I've noticed, the last few years I've been more focused, so now I would not even look at a company like that. I would say, what they're doing is not interesting to me. And then there's some companies where they might have an impact, but I say that's not the sort of impact I understand, social impact. Maybe there is, or edutech, it's not really my field. So I wouldn't go there. I still allow myself once or twice to invest in a company where the technology is really exciting. I understand it, I like it, and maybe it's not going to have a huge impact on the world. It'll just positively, won't solve an SDG, it will be nice, clever.
So now it's basically climate, healthcare,
climate, right,
and the public market. Are there other aspects of the allocation that you look at and say, I don't know, our bond portfolio, perhaps the real estate that was mentioned a few times earlier, in the day, that portfolio.
Yep. I will go into that, but I just, because you mentioned climate again. So the climate is a focus because we have kids, Friday night, we're sitting here discussing the world, and we have responsibility to the kids. We have to show them, we have to put our money in making their lives a little bit better when they grow up. So make the world better. So climate is, that's really the focus of why climate is so important, because we have kids. Because we're looking at the next generations, we have a responsibility. In terms of portfolio allocation, I am looking into private equity funds, which have a impact focus, just as a way of diversifying. And also some public indexes which have a specific target, like water or energy and things like that. So taking not just general, but being more specific there. I don't do bonds very much. The bank in the States, which is managing the philanthropic foundation, has allocated more to bonds than I do personally, just because he says that's the structure of a foundation. They need bonds because they have to...
Lower risk.
Right, they have the 5% which they only have to give, they have to make sure they have it.
Right.
So that's an issue which is why they have bonds. And then you mentioned, again, I actually invest in KIEDF. It's a small...
Competitor. I'm just kidding. I was joking.
There's enough in the space.
Yeah, sure.
And this was during the pandemic. It was loans to Arab businesses, and they would give me 4% on this million shekel loan, which I gave them. It had good government guarantees, and there was like first loss from the government and all those things, so it seemed excellent. And Bank Leumi would give me the same money for 2%. I just borrowed money from the bank and lent it to KIDF. And hopefully they'll pay me back.
Yeah. You mentioned the Friday night dinner with the kids. How much have your children been involved in this process, and how important is it, not only regarding the climate, which I accept, but more along the lines of passing the values that you're focused on to the next generation, not only passing the wealth on to the next generation, but also passing those values together. Are they part of that process? Are they part of the discussion?
The kids are 19, 18, and 15. Almost, it's almost their birthday,
tough
so
age.
Add 1 year. Kids. And they're doing fine. They seem to have decent values.
But they are
the
teenagers.
Oldest in the army, doing good work there, and the younger, middle daughter is in Shnat Shirut, going into the army next year. So they seem to have good values. We haven't, Nikki's gonna have a different, she'll talk later, she has a different way of dealing it. We do it differently, partly because we haven't actually exposed them to the actual amount of money the family has. They probably have an idea that we're better off than our peers,
they've heard
than
of
our neighbors.
Mobile, I assume.
They've heard about Mobileye, but if you Google Gideon Stein, like net worth, you'll get a different Gideon Stein. So because of that, we haven't involved them in all the decisions. It's like how many companies, exactly which company, the amount of money we're willing to put in a company, and how much is in the public. So we don't involve them. I do talk about individual companies and why we're excited about them. I do. I've taken them to some of the companies to see what they're interested in. Mostly, they're also, my son's very scientific, so it's very exciting for him and for the others. And I don't ask them at this point about investing. What we have done is We set it up. We haven't actually done much about it. We set up a bank account, which we've all dedicated. They put in 10% of their money, and we put in money. Now it's for $50,000 in it, with the idea that it'll be a philanthropic account, which the kids will be involved in investing from. Investing and donating. So to build it like a family foundation, like the 501c3, but a smaller scale. So it was an excellent idea. We haven't done the follow through, and it's just really sitting in the bank. But the idea is to help bring them in. We haven't been as successful in actually doing it.
Okay. I wanted to open up the floor to a question or two, if anyone has a question for Gideon, myself, anybody else? Mark, sure.
In the areas that you look, general areas, so two big areas are the financial sector, meaning banks, and crypto. Are those on the do not look at list or on the neutral list? Certainly not on the impact list.
The crypto, I would go to, I might meet the startup to learn about it because it's important. I probably, very unlikely that I would invest in startups in those fields. I don't understand them enough. I don't think I don't know how it's going to solve our climate issues. And if it does, I could understand you build a marketplace to deal with carbon futures, right? But that's not technologically interesting to me. So it might actually be in the right sphere of climate, but not the technology I'm looking for. I like nuts and bolts. It's what we did at Mobileye.
Take one more, yes.
Value Squared ESG fund that you were, I think, a co-investor or founder. Can you tell us a little bit more how big it is, what does it do, just a little bit more detail?
It invests in public equity. It's got it's about $25 million now under assets under management, so it's small. It's here based in Tel Aviv. They have multiple products. One is a managed fund. The other is an index based on more or less the S&P 500, but the companies you want to use. The same for the Tel Aviv 125. I'm also on the Tel Aviv 125, the committee for Tel Aviv 125 fossil free. We have a Zoom this afternoon. But fossil free is not good enough in my book. I'd like which 60 companies out of the Tel Aviv 125 are the real companies we want to be invested in. Now, there was a question earlier about how much difference you really make by investing in ESG and SDG. In the public equities, it's called additionality, right? How much does my investment make a difference? First of all, I don't want to do bad things, right? So I don't want my money in those companies. So it's really what I do. The other thing was, and that's why I'm here, it's the education part of it, right? By setting up Value Squared, we have the additionality because we are providing another platform for this. And by being here and talking about it, I'm hopefully bringing other people into investing in impact in the public equity, for example. So if some of you start thinking about that and investing your money, then think about the multiplier effect of my investments. So that's why I'm in it. But I think it's a good thing. You're not going to invest in companies which are like gun trafficking into Africa, right? Or prostitution or drugs cartels. So think, am I going to invest in companies who have caused so much climate damage? No, I don't want to invest in those companies, even if my taking the money out is not the same as Norway's sovereign wealth fund taking. And other people will invest there. They're not so nice people in the money.
On that note, Dr. Stein, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Good. Great.